email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 551, ray@rte.ie. Now, back at the end of March, we spoke to Roscrea native James McManus. He was here in studio telling us about his plans to climb Mount Everest without supplementary oxygen. And if he was successful, it would make him one of 217 people in the world that have managed to achieve that. So it's a very small club. And then more recently, about 4 weeks ago, we spoke to James at base camp. And he described the scene there and the flags and the tents. And he was telling us that his preparations for his attempt to climb Everest was going according to plan. And he told us that he would be attempting it at the end of May. And here we are at the end of May. James featured in the papers yesterday. And he's on the line now. And he's in hospital in Kathmandu. Hello, James.
Hi, Ray. How's it going?
Good. So things obviously didn't go according to plan. Remind us when you were planning to go to the summit.
Yeah, so the actual plan to reach the summit was for today, the 24th of May. So the last time I was chatting to you, I just finished my second rotation on the mountain. And then I did a third one, moving up to nearly 8,000 metres. Which was really successful. Then I took 5 days rest. And then that brought me up to Saturday when I started moving up from base camp up to camp two. And then we were planning to move up to camp three on Sunday and then camp four on Monday and then summit on today. But the weather was too bad. There was winds of between 40 and 100 kilometers an hour from Tuesday right through till the end of this week when the season ended. So unfortunately, we didn't get a window to try and climb the mountain at all.
And will you explain to me again why you plan to leave your attempt to close to the end of the window?
Yeah, it's a good question. And in hindsight, maybe it wasn't the best idea. But basically, when you're climbing without oxygen, right, you're much, much colder. The oxygen keeps you a lot warmer. So you need to go at the end of the season when it's typically a little bit warmer. And the more important reason is that from the 23rd or 24th on, there's very few people left on the mountain. So if we went at the first window, over 200 people went for the summit on the same time. That was on like the 12th or 13th of May. And the problem there is that I get stuck in a summit queue. And if I was in a summit queue, I wouldn't be moving, so I wouldn't be generating any body heat, and I'd get too cold and I'd have to turn around. So, like, it was a good plan. In hindsight, maybe I should have been ready to go around the 18th, 19th, but, like, you know, the thing about that then is that maybe, you know, that could have been the first window in some years. So it's just really hard to tell, but so unfortunately the weather caught us out. Like, the thing about it is we could have gone up and tried myself and cheering, but it would have just been reckless and dangerous, and you know, there's no point going up there and telling an epic story of how you got frostbite and this, that and the other and didn't make it. It's just insanity to go up there in those conditions.
I feel very sorry for you, James, because you'd put so much effort into it, months and months of preparation, climbing mountains here, there and everywhere all over the world, and this was excuse the well-intentioned pun, this was the peak of your achievements supposedly. And what about your health? Why are you in hospital?
Well, first of all, don't feel too sorry for me, because there's worse things going on in the world. Okay. You know, it's just a mountain, and I'm going to go back and try it again, but thank you. And in regard to my health, it's basically on my acclimatization rotations, going from base camp to camp two was normally taking me between around 7 hours, slightly less than 7 hours. And when I went up to go for a summit, it took me 12 and a half hours. So I had a complete loss of power and just energy. And I didn't really understand. I'm really concerned as to why. So when we decided to abandon the summit attempt and I came back down to base camp, I went to see a doctor there, and that doctor couldn't figure out what was going on. So I got a heli evacuation to Lukla on Monday, and then I came to Kathmandu today. And they've been running tests on me with a CT scan. The doctor suspects it's pulmonary edema, which is fluid on the lungs, she also thinks cerebral edema, which is fluid on the brain, but I'm not sure about that one. But we'll see. I'm expecting results in the next hour or two, and that will kind of explain my lack of energy on the mountain. But the treatment for pulmonary edema is to come back down to sea level, which Kathmandu isn't much above, and just to take on fluids and things like that. So it's more really, Ray, to figure out why I had that lack of energy, because I've been doing a lot of reflecting in the last couple of days, and I actually want to go and climb all of the 14 mountains, which are over 8,000 meters in the world, without oxygen over the next, however many years. So it's more from a performance perspective, understanding why I didn't perform, because the reality of it is the weather stopped me, but physically I wouldn't have been able to go to the summit anyway for unknown reasons at this moment in time. But hopefully I'll find out over the next couple of days.
Well, the cerebral edema sounds a lot more serious. What do you understand that is?
So that's fluid on the brain, but like my dad in Ross Grey, he's a retired GP, and we were just chatting about it, it's basically like an advanced form of altitude sickness. It's when you can get fluid in the lungs or fluid on the brain. But the reason the doctor was suspecting that is she was getting me to walk in a straight line, like one foot in front of the other in the hospital, and I was a little bit uneasy. But I don't think I'd be holding a coherent conversation with you or anybody else if I had cerebral edema. So
yeah,
I'm not sure. Maybe we'll see. But I don't think there's a way of testing for that, to be honest, even in a hospital setting. But regardless, it's more, I suppose, like when I came down, it was more of a process of elimination. So I've had a blood test, I had a PCR test to check for COVID, and I've had the CT scan to check for pulmonary edema, because, you know, even any of your listeners, like, their walk to the shop is like 5 minutes, and suddenly it's taking them 10 minutes and they're out of breath. You know, there's something going on with their health. So I just really, really want to find that out. As I said, I'm planning on coming back and doing more of these huge mountains without oxygen. So
okay,
it's pretty important that I know what's going on.
So in reflecting over the last while, you're determined to make another attempt at Everest without supplementary oxygen.
Yeah, I definitely am. Yeah, for sure. Like I remember the last time I was chatting, you were asking me about why and stuff like that, and like I think, I don't know, it's maybe not the healthiest thing to compare to others, but my mum, she died when she was 59 of cancer, you know, and she was actually trekking in the Himalayas when she got the diagnosis, she got the back pain, and then she got the diagnosis in January, and like, she was never ready to die, Ray. She wanted to do more stuff and experience more things and live life to the absolute max. And like, you know, I've a niece in Australia who's got a rare genetic disease, and she's a non-verbal and has trouble walking. So like, you know, you look at people like that and different people in different walks of life, and you're like, Jesus, I'm fit and healthy and I have the ability to go do these things, so I absolutely have to go do it and live life for the gift that it is, and just experience it to the absolute maximum. And yeah, I love the mountains as well. I just love the feeling of being on expedition and the sense of purpose it gives you. It's absolutely amazing.
So what's the plan now over the next few days, assuming that the tests are going to come back negative and you're healthy enough to travel?
Yeah, so hopefully now I want something to come back positive. I want to be told it's something, rather than not getting an answer, because that would really kind of put a big question mark over coming back and doing these. So yeah, I'm in Kathmandu for a few days, sharing my climbing partner and climbing Sherpa. He's en route, so We are going to celebrate the expedition as a success in what it was, you know. We're going to go for a few beers probably in a couple of days' time if the doctors are okay with that. Because it was a really big success. You know, I became friendly with a German climber while I was here. He's a professional climber sponsored by North Face. He's been trying to climb Everest without oxygen for 9 years. And he succeeded this year. Okay. So, you know, you got to put it in context to like to rock up in your first year and think you're on a summit. It's not going to work like that. And, you know, all the bits in my control, I did really, really well. So it was a very, very successful expedition. And then I'm back in a couple of days time, and I'm going to take a little bit of time off. Maybe go to I've a music festival or two planned in the next couple of weeks. And then I'll get back to training and start planning for the next big mountain, because there's 14 mountains over 8,000 meters. There's 8 in Nepal, 5 in Pakistan, and 1 in China, and they're all really, really hard. So it's going to be getting my team around me and start planning for those. So yeah, really exciting times ahead.
Just on your team, and when you were talking to us back in March, you said that part of what you wanted to achieve, as well as reaching the summit, was to raise awareness about not really the plight, but the job that Sherpas do.
It's incredible what they do. You know, like they're phenomenal. They fix the rope to the summit for all of us to go. And I think one of the things that people need to be aware of with Sherpa, especially on big, big mountains, is how dangerous the dynamic is between the client and the Sherpa, because they're instructed by their employers to make their client very, very happy. Is, you know, we would tell our guides in Earth's Edge to make our clients happy as well. But with the level of English they have, sometimes it can get a little bit dangerous, where you have an overly egotistical, ill-informed client who wants to go to the top no matter what. The authority of the Sherpa to tell them no and to turn around is sometimes lacking. Mm. And also, some climbers have no respect for their own life and that of the Sherpa. So Nepal needs to do a little bit more work in how they're regulating the industry and who they're allowing to come and climb the mountain, because it's just sad, the level of human error and lack of respect that's costing lives out here. So but they're amazing people, and as I said to you before, I think anybody thinking about coming to Nepal and going trekking, like, just, or climbing, whatever, it doesn't really matter. It's such a positive thing to do. But just to check that little piece about the welfare of the Sherpa, how they're being treated and how they're being paid, people shouldn't be shy of asking their operator about those things. Mm-hmm. Because they're really, really important, because there's no regulation for them here in Nepal. But amazing people, like, phenomenal, so friendly, and just, they're unbelievable athletes as well. You'd have to see it, like, they're just so powerful and amazing. Yeah, so I love it here. I love Nepal. I love the people. It's just amazing to be here.
James, mind yourself and enjoy the couple of beers with Chering when you get to hook up with them in Kathmandu. And I'm sure we'll be talking again in the future.
Thanks so much, Ray. I really appreciate it, man. Good luck to you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.